And our last case for argument, Honaki versus Klein Acosta, Mr. Mix. Or?
May it please the court, I'm John Mix. I represent Dr. Irene Honaki, who is the plaintiff appellant. I'd like to introduce my co-counsel to the court, Mr. Edward Diederich of DeKalb.
Mm-hmm.
I know the court has read the briefs filed herein. It's a constitutional tort. We are up here on a single issue, a summary judgment, counter motions for summary judgment, wherein the plaintiff sought summary judgment on the issue of employment, and the defendants sought summary judgment on the issue of employment as well.
And that was the only issue on this summary judgment?
Yes, Your Honor. And we believe the evidence is overwhelming that this plaintiff was controlled by the state of Illinois. The only difference between her and a physician who was paid directly by the state was the payment of benefits and salary. She was completely the same.
How is this any different from the employee of a cleaning service that comes into people's homes and cleans? And of course, the owner of the home can tell the cleaning service, you know, I don't want that person in my house anymore. But the employees of the cleaning service are regarded as employees of the cleaning service, and the homeowners of the United States would be shocked to find that those were really its employees, because it could order them off the premises and, you know, subject them to the rules of the household. You know, don't drop any precious porcelain objects and so on.
Oh, they could certainly have secured the discharge of this plaintiff and not had any liability under this constitutional tort.
But the point is, there can be very close control over the activities of the person while they're in the house, down to use this method, not that method, do this room, not that room, very meticulous direction. So although ability to direct is part of what's going on, none of the cases have said that it's everything. And in this case, Dr. Honaki does have an employment relationship with Addis. Do you suppose if somebody at Addis, when she went back to report in one day, was engaging in a terrible course of sexual harassment against her, that she would not be able to sue Addis as her employer?
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
She would not be able to.
I know. I think she could.
So
I think
you
have this
dual employment.
Well, I think that's what many cases hold. They're dual employment.
Yeah, okay, because I was going to say, Addis is clearly her employer for that purpose, and under Title VII, you can only sue your employer. You can't sue supervisors and others. So part of your case is certainly correctly dismissed.
However, she never went to Addis.
I'm just trying to.
I mean, that's
out
the difference.
That the rule that you're arguing for,
yes.
Because in this situation where there's an outside agency that furnishes professionals, computer services, people do that all the time. A lot of people work for a general computer business and send an expert to go work maybe for months, maybe for years in a business. But they're the employee of the general service, not of the company.
Well, I do disagree with Your Honor on that point. You can certainly find numerous cases. Just take the Microsoft case that we mentioned in there, which they went through an in-bank hearing and mandamus after that. You had an independent contractor's contract. That's in solid independent contractor's contract. And when you have such an independent contractor's contract, that contract can be broken into by the control. I mean, this is, I don't think there's any question that if you have sufficient, you know, we have the five...
You could have the subterfuge, but look, the prison here couldn't fire her. It could keep her off the premises, but if Addis Care had had a, Addis Healthcare had had a, had had another suitable facility where she could work, it could just have put her there.
Well, you understand that we contend there was a conspiracy between all of these defendants to have her replaced by a replacement, and that they got together and they concocted this particular reason in order to have her discharged, because they had to. They couldn't take an employee of her stature.
Well, if you have a conspiracy, what does it matter who employs her? I don't get that.
Well, I'm explaining the difference between your example and...
I don't get that. I mean, what difference would her employment status make if she was the victim of a conspiracy?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, we contend that when they could bar her from the prison, if they had barred her from the prison without giving any explanation, we would not be here.
Now, in other words, you don't think the employment status is outcome determinative of your lawsuit?
Oh, we must prove that she's an employee.
Of who?
Of the state. Or we don't have a... Because...
Well,
are you sure of that?
That is our position. Because she is a public employee.
So you're not relying on the Kartsiva case at all, then?
We have not relied on that.
That's not a theory of your case.
That is not a theory of our case.
You're not relying on the theory that the state, in effect, has created such a blot on her character by barring her from the institution that she cannot be employed in her profession anywhere.
We have not relied on that. We relied on the state accusations against her.
Now I'm confused, because I thought that was your 1983 claim.
No, our claim is here in the constitutional tort, 14th Amendment for name clearing.
Well, that's what Judge
yes,
just
well, described. I understand that, but it's not based upon, because she, if the sufficient control over her, she is an employee of the state. If that's a dispute, I'd be very happy to go into that at length there.
Let me put it to you this way, Mr. Mix. If we don't agree with you today and believe that summary judgment was correctly granted to your opponents on the issue of employment, is there anything left in this case?
We are out of court. And we believe that from all of these cases, you have these series of cases with the five night factors, you have the Microsoft cases, you have the cases of that went adverse to the plaintiff in, the 10th Circuit, Zinn, and we believe that in those cases, you take the Zinn case, Your Honor, if you would. You had the same situation contract-wise. You take the district court case here that we find to be at odds with ours from this circuit. You have the same contract. There is a finding of employment, of public employment, in those cases. I mean, there is an open finding of public employment in those cases. We contend she was a public employee because the only difference between her and a doctor who is paid by the state, that is the only difference. It's identical. And the control is the same. Everything is the same except who pays the benefits. And that makes her, in our opinion, the employee of the state.
What's this Microsoft case you're talking about?
That's quite a case, Your Honor.
Did you talk about it in your brief?
Pardon?
Is it in your brief? Or
yes, Your Honor. It's in the reply brief.
In your reply brief?
Yes.
I don't have a reply brief from you.
It's in the...
Okay, why don't you reserve the rest of your time?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Welsh?
Good morning, Your Honor. Excuse me, may I please the court?
Why are there two appellee briefs and two arguments? Is there some difference between you and the... Are you the state or...
I'm the state. I represent the state defendants,
yes. Is there some difference
yes.
between the state and the... Some difference in position between the state and the... And Addis Healthcare?
We are in agreement. All the defendants are in agreement, I believe, as to whether the plaintiff was an employee of the state. We're in agreement that she was not. We're also in agreement that...
Well, where is the disagreement?
The disagreement, I believe, there are two. One is the jurisdictional aspect, which has been resolved. The state did not give a position as to whether Addis and Haney were acting under color of state law.
Can I ask you a question about this issue? Despite what Mr. Mix just said, I certainly have no problem understanding why the question whether she's an employee or an independent contractor is pertinent to her Title VII theory. Lots of cases make it very clear that you have a claim if you are an employee and you don't if you're an independent contractor. I am much less certain why that makes any difference for the 1983 claim after the Supreme Court's decision in O'Hare Truck Service against City of Northlake, which extended the Elrod versus Burns, the political patronage
right.
issues, basically, to independent contractors. That was the issue the Supreme Court was deciding in O'Hare Truck Service, whether you had to be an employee or whether it was enough to be an independent contractor, and they said it was enough to be an independent contractor. So it seems to me, following up on what Judge Ripple has been saying, is if the essence is that the state in any capacity has so deprived her of her good name as to make her literally blocked from her profession, perhaps under O'Hare Truck it doesn't make any difference if she was an employee or an independent contractor.
Right. I think it's really a different question with regard to whether someone is an employee for that kind of...
But it is raised in the complaint.
I'm sorry?
That question is raised in the complaint.
Which question are you saying? That,
go ahead, please, with your argument.
I'm sorry. That whether she's a government employee, this court, as far as I know, has never held that an employee, a non-government employee, has the right to a name clearing hearing.
It's completely irrelevant. If the government renders a person unemployable by going beyond ordinary defamation and publicizes charges which makes this person completely unemployable, that's considered a deprivation of liberty within the meaning of the 14th Amendment, and there has to be due process. So the employment status of the victim of such a wrong is completely irrelevant.
Well, Your Honor, I think that if the court made that decision, then that would make a conflict with the D.C. Circuit in the Moore case. Kortseva was the decision that the court mentioned earlier, but that decision, as we mentioned in the footnote in our brief, has been undermined, I believe, substantially, if not entirely, by the D.C. court's later decision in Moore.
How?
Because in that decision, the court said that you had to, that because those people who Moore was a contract employee to an agency, not a direct government employee, and Moore talked about the public policy problems behind extending a federal claim to employees of contract agencies.
No, this has nothing to do with employment. I mean, suppose the government of the United States the state of Illinois circulated a poster saying that Miss Welsh is a dishonest, incompetent person and would be a serious mistake for any firm to offer her a job. That would be considered a deprivation of liberty, and you'd be entitled to some kind of hearing before that publicity was disseminated. And that's really nothing to do with whether you're employed, who employs you. It's related to defamation. It has nothing to do with duties to employees.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, I mean, it would appear that at least the D.C. Circuit would disagree with that analysis.
Well, this under is the Supreme Court.
Under Moore. Well, no, but also...
It doesn't matter what the D.C. Circuit thinks. I'm sure they don't disagree with it, actually.
Yes. I see my time is almost up. I want to... give the rest of my time to my co-counsel.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Well, Mr. Carpinelli?
May it please the Court, Your Honors. I represent Addis and the individual corporate employee defendant, Mark Haney. As it relates to constitutional import of the Count 1 complaint, from our perspective, I do not recall the tort which Your Honors are referring to being raised in the complaint. It strikes me that my reading of the complaint is very specific. What the plaintiff wants here is a name-clearing hearing from the state of Illinois, didn't ask for it from any individual defendants, and has conceded to this court here in open oral argument that under any set of circumstances, all they're seeking is a return on the issue of employment. I think that would be a novel and a unique position to be taken at this late stage.
Now, why exactly are you... Why do you care whether you're the employer or the state is the... I mean, I understand why the state, obviously, doesn't want to be her employer, but why do you care?
Because the complaint at Count 1 seeks relief against us, and I could envision...
And on what theory is that? Is that some kind of conspiracy or something like that?
It is a conspiracy
really,
which we
really
moved...
An employee, she's really an employee of the state, but you somehow... assisted the state by he described this conspiracy. You and the state got together to make sure she could never be employed again or something. Is that?
I believe that's right.
You understood them to be charging.
That's what I understood them to be charging, and they did that exclusively, however, based upon the fact that the state of Illinois determined that she was not eligible to be allowed into the premises for security reasons, and that as a consequence, we had no alternative site to employ her, and we terminated her. There's no other facts in a conspiracy that I'm aware of in the lower court record where there was any action or activity taken by either Addis, Mr. Haney, or anyone else that was in the nature of what you would regard as inappropriate conduct as it related to the plaintiff, Honacki. After all, we employed her, we reacted to what the Department of Corrections did.
What was the? I suppose I should have asked Ms. Welsh, but it's too late. What was the concern about the was it 7-Up?
It was 7-Up.
Well, why?
It was. I think it was.
Maybe technically, it was contra. But what was it? Is there some story behind this? Why they were just so upset about?
There is no story behind it other than that it was a regulation of the prison that these items would not be given nor smuggled into the facility for security reasons.
It seems to be something that really countermanded her medical judgment. Anybody who's raised children knows that when you're dehydrated, every pediatrician in the world will tell you give people, you know, clear liquid, 7-Up, Sprite, you know, et cetera, and because it has a little sugar in it and it rehydrates the person. And it looked to me like there was at least a conflict between what she thought was medically necessary and what perhaps otherwise perfectly reasonable prison regulations might provide.
I far be it from me to delve into the realm of what is appropriate medically under these circumstances, but it seems to me that I think it could have been avoided had a prescription been written if it is a contraband in a setting where it shouldn't be given out to prisons for no reason, than a prior written prescription or some alternative. Certainly,
are they worried about the can being used as a weapon?
You know what? That's not in the record below. It's not in the record. There's no indication.
So we just don't know.
No.
So better
don't.
To string them up on an ID with a glucose drip.
Possibly. Yeah. Possibly. Possibly. It looks more like a medical order than.
Mr. Capelli, what does it actually say in your contract with the state about bar orders? The correspondence is equivocal on this. The warden wrote to your person and said it's recommended that disciplinary action be taken. And yet the correspondence within your corporation says the warden issued a bar order. What does the contract say about this? I mean,
the contract reserves to Addis the right to hire and fire. And the letter that Your Honor refers to, which is in the record, was written by Mr. Haney, and it is a bit equivocal. I at one point in the letter it refers to the dual relationship, which I shuddered at when I looked at it preparing for this appeal. But I think it comes from an individual who simply tried to do what was appropriate given the circumstances. And the letter, I think, in even the light most favorable to the plaintiff here on appeal, was that you were in trouble with the department, you can't go there, we can't employ you. They did talk about alternative employment, said we have no openings and therefore you're terminated.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Mix, how much time does he have?
40 seconds.
Okay.
Mr. Mix, if I may invite your attention to page 23 of your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
On page 23 of your brief, you deal with the district court's footnote and in which the Kartseva case is mentioned, and you indicate that it would not have been appropriate for you to argue this on a motion for summary judgment limited to the issue of employment. Now, I find it difficult to deal with this passage in your brief and the statement you made to the court during your argument in chief.
I misspoke. We did discuss it. However, I would like to make just one additional point, if I might. We call this an independent contractor's contract. Those independent contractors' contract are negated by showing control. I think there's no doubt about that under anybody's law. And when you have such a complete control, and there are plenty of these employment agency cases where you go there, first of all, you go in for a day or so back and forth, you're not an employee of the person you go to. But if you go there over a long period of time, and if the only difference is that they funneled. She was actually hired by this.
But loads of big companies employ cleaning services, and they come every day.
Well, under the Microsoft case, Your Honor, is which I selected that because you had both this particular issue and the independent contractor's contract, and then you had where they had the independent contractor's contract. It eventually ended up in summary judgment in favor of the plaintiffs in those cases after the district court had denied their motion.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both parties. This will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.